Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
That's today. It's Football Sunday here on WEEI. Christian Arcand,
love
Ted
that
Johnson.
Bump back. Love it.
We got Chris Schein. We got Megan Ottolini here. And it is 11 o'clock, which means it's time for They Said It.
One, two, three.
It's time for
Playoffs? You kidding me?
Would not say that I'm Mona Lisa Vito of the football world.
They want you to cook the dinner. At least they ought to let you shop for some of the groceries.
Said it.
I just hope we can win a game.
But they are who we thought they were.
They said it.
And we let them off the hook.
Football Sunday edition.
36 counter naked waggle at 7.
I'm just going to say
WEEI.
Welcome into They Said It here on WEEI Football Sunday. One of those guys in that open was inducted into the Patriots Hall of Fame just yesterday. He was one of Ted Johnson's favorite coaches of all time. That would be one Bill Parcells. And he talked about how he would have done things a little differently on his exit from the New England Patriots.
This place has a place in my heart. It always will. We sometimes reflect on things and you wish you would have done things a little differently. Well, when I come back here and I see this, I wish I would have done things a little differently.
I mean, he got a huge ovation after that.
I'm sure he did, but a lot of people still haven't forgiven him.
No, for taking that out of the plane. My dad was one of them.
There's a reason why it took him so long to get in, I think. That's a big part of it. I think that's a big part of the controversy here with Bill Parcells, and there is still a very large portion of the fan base that is not over that and thinks that that was about as low of a thing as you could possibly do. Even with the last 20 years of success, people still hold a grudge for that. I hear these callers all the time. They call in still and still talk about it. So like that didn't just go away.
Do you think it's a 50-50 split? What do you think? Because he's polarizing. I think people are either way on his side or way against him.
I think that's probably shrunk down to maybe a third. I'd say two-thirds don't care anymore. One-third still
very
does.
Loud.
Oh, yeah.
I think this is an example that Bill Parcells set that I would love to see the other older gentlemen who have come through Foxborough or remain in Foxborough to follow. Just show a little humility. Show a little bit that you could be, I don't know, maybe a little bit wrong in some of your actions or things that you said. I'm talking about you, Bill Belichick.
How wild is this?
As you're getting your butt kicked by other college football
UCF
programs.
In any
and I'm
group.
Talking about you, Robert Kraft, too, because he's kind of trying. But then, 4 weeks after any time he says something showing a little humility or I maybe didn't operate in the best way, then he says something that takes it all the way back.
Any group where Bill Parcells is the humble one?
Yeah.
that's quite
what I'm
a group.
About.
It really is.
Can I make a quick little case for Bill Parcells?
Sure.
So Bill Parcells was only here for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
4 years. And in that time, he would either drafted or signed 3 Pro Football Hall of Fame players. He either drafted or signed 6 Patriot Hall of Famers, and he was he either drafted or signed 7 players that were on the 2001 Super Bowl team, and he drafted eight players that were on that 2001 team, and then he drafted or signed 7 players that were on the 2001, 2003, 2004 Super Bowl teams.
Wow.
That
to me is where you if you are wondering if he had an impact, 7 players were on all 3 of those Super Bowl teams, and I would argue were the foundational pieces for those teams. And so that to me is one of the big things that people overlook in his impact with this team.
Bill Parcells was also the funniest coach I think the Patriots have ever had.
No question.
Right? I mean, it was going back to the guys in the 70s and the 80s, I couldn't really tell you, but Parcells was hilarious. Like, he was really funny.
Do you want me to give you a couple examples?
Absolutely.
My gosh, where do I start? I mean, I was hoping it was a story I could tell yesterday.
Get kicked off the air here. FCC's on the warpath these days.
People ask me, what was your biggest moment, like when Bill Parcells were your coach, where you're like, oh my gosh, you're in the NFL? It was simply this. It was in a meeting. Bill Parcells in a team meeting just early in my rookie season, 1995. Came in after a game. It was after the first, I think, home game against Cleveland. He says, all right, gentlemen, we had a issue in the family section at the game. Guys, I guess there were some things that went on up there. Here's the deal. Can you guys do me all a favor, do yourselves a favor? From now on, make sure that you have your wives and your girlfriends in separate sections, please. And I remember I called my dad. I'm like, Dad, can you believe that Bill Parcells said this? And it was just one of those things where you're like, I'm in the NFL, baby. The head coach is addressing wives and girlfriends. But that I have so many other great anecdotes. But he was very, very clever. One more I'll give you quick. Chris Slade, Willie McGinnis, never shut up. Those guys were constantly talking, always just jibber-jabbing
shower
all the time.
Shower check, homie.
And Parcells walked by those guys in a whole defense in a practice one time. He goes, you guys ever shut the hell up? You should get your a talk show called BS with Chris and Willie. He didn't say BS. And then he walks away, and we kind of got to laugh. It wasn't his best line. Then he stops. He turns around. He says, you know what? Better yet, why don't you both go on Jeopardy? I'll take no sacks for $500, please.
Damn.
And then that was it. Yeah. That was Bill Parcells.
That's pretty good.
I'll take no sacks.
Saying it to those two.
Saying it to Willie and Chris.
Especially Willie McGinnis.
Yeah, geez. All right, what else we got here, Sean?
Well, let's get back to this this Patriots team. Brian Hoyer joined WEEI Afternoons this week and said Josh McDaniels needs some credit.
Give Josh a lot of credit for him running a system he did for a long time. There were some plays, particularly on that first drive, the throwback to Austin Hooper. That's straight out of the Kyle Shanahan West Coast playbook. I ran that in Cleveland with Kyle. I ran that in San Francisco with Kyle. And so Josh is adapting his system to suit Drake May's talents. And the reality is Drake feels comfortable throwing on the run. So I think you're going to see that. And the hard part about that is when you're the play caller is if you're not running the ball well, then the defense isn't really always going to honor that.
So my question to the room is, and this may be a slanted question, but I'll ask it anyways. Do you actually believe it was Josh McDaniels incorporating parts of the Shanahan-McVay offense in this? Or Mike Vrabel walked in the room, said, hey, Josh, we need to fix some things here on the offense. Take some more input from a guy like Thomas Brown. And let's work on doing some of these different things and adding these to the playbook.
That's such an aggro way to ask that.
I said it might be
slanted.
I'm excited to answer it, though.
The question you're actually asking is, was this Josh McDaniels' individual unique idea,
or
did someone in the room come in and tell him you better do this?
But that's kind of been his entire career, in my opinion, right? Because you and I have looked at him as a play caller, head coach, offensive coordinator, away from the New England Patriots, away from the fingers of Bill Belichick. When he doesn't have a guiding hand, his offenses stink. He's had one top 12 offense ever, and they were 12th. And so, but with Bill Belichick, the offense tends to be better. Bill Belichick or Tom Brady.
Shime. If somebody did, Mike Vrabel or whoever, walk into the room and say, you need to start implementing these concepts and other people on my staff who have good ideas, you need to listen to them and implement them, then kudos to Josh. Like, even if it's not his idea, if he's accepting somebody else's idea,
that's the head coach.
The way that functional staffs operate. Yeah. Is somebody brings an idea to the table.
And also, once the game starts, he can call the offense. You know what I mean? Like, he doesn't have to do all that. But, once the game starts.
Well, I mean, if he's not calling stuff the right way, Vrabel will be in his ear. Like, that'll happen pretty quickly.
Maybe, but, once you're there,
I'm
just throwing out the theory, that's all.
I think it's something to monitor, though. I'm curious because I think Josh has an ego, and I think Josh doesn't like to be told what offense to run, and I think there's Shimes onto something to some degree. I think he's onto something, so I'm curious to see if he continues the McVay stuff, because that is not his style of offense? Is he going to acquiesce, give in, and do what's best for the team and Drake May, or is he going to stick to what, you know, and there's a little bit of arrogance from those coaches that were with the Bill Belichick. I'm sorry, there is. So well,
tough to be arrogant after 13 points against the Raiders, I don't think you want to keep doing that.
Something to monitor, that's all.
Yeah, certainly. All right, what else?
Well, one of the big talkers this week was the fact that Tom Brady last weekend was seen in the booth with a headset on, communicating with Raiders coaching staffs and people in the Raiders organization after having been calling plays for Fox and stuff. And it began this whole discussion of, is it even okay for Tom Brady to be a part owner and be talking to other teams because he's a radio broadcaster? Here was former teammate of his, Rodney Harrison, talking
radio
about...
Brady would never be a radio broadcaster.
No. That face is the moneymaker. He's got
Did I say radio?
He'd never lower himself to
My
radio
fault.
Broadcast.
Television on Fox. Here was Rodney Harrison, his ex-teammate, talking about the conflict of interest.
Well, when they first panned to him up there with the headphones on, I'm saying he's talking to one of the coaches. He's giving them tremendous insight. You know, and as a player slash businessman, I understand that Tom's going to take advantage of every opportunity that he gets. Think about it. When we walk on that field, we get so much information. We get all the behind the scenes information. We get, you know, which the average fan has no idea the type of information we're getting. We're getting, you know, information on players' health, how a team was built, how tough a guy is. You could talk to scouts, coaches, general managers, and just people within the organization. They're going to give you all this information. And Tom Brady's a smart dude. He's going to use this.
Do we think it's an actual conflict of interest here, or is this totally being overblown?
I think 100% it's a conflict of interest, and I think it's ridiculous people acting like it isn't. If this was anybody else, I don't think there'd even be a conversation. They're trying to shoehorn Tom Brady into this because they like the idea of him staying on as this ambassador and owner and, you know, being still part of the NFL. But this is ridiculous. You can't have somebody that's that invested in a team going in there and getting intel on all the other teams.
But if owners really cared, why would they allow him to become a part owner? Like, he was already a Fox broadcaster at the time.
Did he need the other owner's permission?
I think there's a vote, right? Isn't there? For the approval?
To sell minority stakes into the...
I thought so. Maybe I'm wrong. You can correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought there were votes for even the minority shareholders.
I think owners see the value in Brady being a part of that group.
Sure.
I think that there's a value to that they all are okay with. But
why wouldn't they then be like, hey, you have to stop being a Fox broadcaster?
I mean, maybe they did, and they came to an agreement of, well, you can do it, but you can't go to this.
They put those into place. Right. Like, he can't be at practice and stuff. He does a Zoom meeting with coaches and players, and that's it. Like, that's the extent of his being able to talk to those teams every week that
he broadcasts. And that's why the owners maybe don't care. But as far as, like, fans are concerned, everything has to be on the up and up here, and this gives the impression that it's not. And that's the most important thing, what it looks like. It looks bad.
Can I give one little... nugget on that, because an owner spoke on anonymity to Diana Rossini of The Athletic and gave his opinion on the situation. And this is basically what he said. Where is it? Gosh dang it.
Very courageous of him to do this anonymously.
NFL owner explained, quote, they are getting, they meaning the Raiders, are getting an unfair advantage whether they capitalize it or not. You don't think he's getting info from the crew that is allowed at practice? Of course he is. And if I may, real quick, just this is Diana Rossini encapsulating what is really going on with Tom Brady and the Raiders, is that after cameras showed him sitting in the Las Vegas coaches booth with the headset on Monday night, the rest of the world finally caught up to what many around the league already knew. Brady is running the Raiders. What Brady himself needs to own is that his role looks far less like that of a quiet minority investor and far more like that of president of football operations. This isn't just superficial or surface level involvement. Brady is talking with Raiders coaches and players during the week, and it's not small talk either. He keeps in close touch with general manager John Spytek and even has his longtime trainer, business owner Alex Guerrero, on the staff as the wellness coordinator overseeing the training staff and strength and conditioning. Brady gets direct information and updates from the roster. He may not physically always be in the building, but he is Viva Las Vegas.
But I have a question.
Go ahead.
Why couldn't the Crafts sell him a small little piece of the Patriots?
Because they're not selling any piece of the
Patriots. He could be doing that for you.
Yep, they could have.
And then nobody around here would have a problem.
But my other thing is that I think the whole the rest of the crew can tell him stuff is bogus. Like, okay, if we're saying other people can tell him stuff, well, then why couldn't Tony Romo or Troy Aikman tell Jerry Jones stuff? It's the same thing.
You know what? If they're not working for the team.
But they're really good friends with Jerry Jones.
Okay.
I think it's
one thing for friends to pass things along. They're not employees and owners of the team.
No, I don't disagree. But
they don't have a headset on.
That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, because in the Diana Rossini thing,
for the team,
it's saying that the other Fox members, so somebody like Kevin Burkhardt is going to go to practice, see something, tell Tom Brady, and then Tom Brady's going to use it with the Raiders. Well, by that logic, then why can't a guy like Troy Aikman or Tony Romo be telling Jerry Jones stuff?
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, listen, I understand what you mean by that, but Brady is also in those two worlds, all right?
He is
holding to both sides.
You don't see Troy Aikman then going into the Dallas coaching booth and have a headset on and doing things actually within the game.
Sure.
Can I give you an example real quick to kind of that might clear for you? The Chicago Bears and the Dallas Cowboys are on Fox this week.
Yep.
With Brady on the call.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Next week, Chicago plays the Raiders.
Yep.
So, in theory, Las Vegas ownership just got a direct line into the Bears scouting report on themselves. No other team in the league has that advantage.
Well, but, like, I don't. There's no advantage. He's calling the game. The All-22 is available to everybody. Everybody can watch it and make their own decisions on how good or bad the Chicago Bears are. By the way, they're bad. Like, I think
they're going to have a good day today, though. I don't like that Dallas defense. We'll talk about that later. Yeah, all right, that's Chris Scheim. He's got what's trending, and then we'll come back here. We'll hear from Tom E. Curran. We'll get your inactives, all that coming up next here on Football Sunday.
The Christian Arcan Show, weeknights starting at 6. Now, here's what's trending on WEEI.
Your New England Patriots kick off at Gillette at 1 o'clock this afternoon to take on Aaron Rodgers and the Pittsburgh Steelers. Inactives will come out in about 15 minutes or so, but we already know that Christian Gonzalez will not play this week. Some injury news around the league. Xavier Worthy of the Chiefs is out this week. Buccaneers wide receiver Amika Egbuka and New York Giants offensive lineman Andrew Thomas are both expected to play. In the 1 o'clock window, we have Packers at Browns, Colts at Titans, Bengals at Vikings, Rams at Eagles, Jets at Bucks, Raiders at Commanders, Falcons at Panthers, and the Texans are at the Jaguars. In the 4 o'clock window, the Broncos are at the Chargers, the Saints are at the Seahawks, the Cowboys are at the Bears, and the Cardinals are at the 49ers. And on Sunday Night Football, we have Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs taking on Russell Wilson and the New York Giants. Kickoff for that one is at 8:20. In non-football news, the Boston Red Sox get the win over the Tampa Bay Rays 6-3 yesterday. Kyle Harrison got his first start for the Sox, going 6 innings, allowing 1 run on 4 hits and striking out 5. Sox send Connolly early to the mound as they try and get the sweep tonight against the Rays. First pitch 7:35 right here on the Shaw's and Star Market WEEI Red Sox Radio Network. Shaw's and Star Market, go shopping, get rewarded. Will Fleming and Will Middlebrooks have the call of the game for you, and make sure to tune in to the MassMutual pregame show right here at 6:35 with Joe Weil. That's what's trending on WEEI and WEEI.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up, you get early payout on parlays too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly
why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arcan, Ted Johnson, Chris Scheim. Mego left. Mego said, I had enough of you guys. I'm out of here. She has to go cover the game. It's very important. So she's out, but we will be with you here for the next hour and a half. And joining us now on the phone from NBC Sports Boston, noted Destiny's Child enthusiast, Tom E. Curran joins the program. Hello, Mr. Tommy. How we doing?
I am great. How are you guys?
Doing Doing very, very well. It's good to hear from you. Nice to talk with you, especially after a win. Let's start out there with what we saw in a game that really, I think, if a couple of bounces had gone the other way, it would have been a devastating loss for the New England Patriots. Instead, they come away with a victory in Miami for the first time in a very, very long time. I know a lot has been said about Miami and how bad their defense is and everything else. Tommy, I know you wrote about them gaining traction on the road with a with sort of a mediocre win, but with a little bit more hindsight looking at it, how do you expect momentum from that game maybe to carry over into 1 o'clock today?
Well, it's a little precarious. That's how I felt about it. Just, say Devin Achane doesn't step out of bounds, it might be a different result. So to me, the Patriots took advantage of bad football. Did they not play bad football themselves? No, they had plenty of occasions to second guess, throwing the ball coming out of the 2-minute warning, for instance. And we can go through the litany of mistakes. It's foggy. I'm on to Pittsburgh. But, it's a precarious kind of traction. You know, they're still on a slippery rock. Can they continue to take advantage of bad football and take some of their own bad football out of the mix? And I think that's really what it boils down to this week against Pittsburgh. What will you do with the traction? Will you learn from the mistakes that you made and not repeat them, the unforced errors especially, and take advantage of whatever Pittsburgh offers you? And can you exploit things that Pittsburgh affords you, which we've seen in the first 2 weeks as they're allowing 150 yards a game on the ground, as they've allowed, over 30 points in both games? So the opportunity should be there, but, with a game like this, Pittsburgh's going to look across the field and say, that's a team we should beat. They've won 8 games the last 2 years. They barely got by Miami. They lost to the Raiders. So this, I think, is an important game for both of these teams in terms of, self-respect.
Tom, Drake May had arguably the best game he's had as an NFL quarterback last week against the Miami Dolphins. As you pointed out, this Pittsburgh Steelers defense, not the very best. Do you feel like a confidence level, maybe scale of 1 to 10, how confident are you that Drake May can have a repeat performance, at least be far more comfortable like he was in week 2 compared to week 1 as the quarterback this week?
I'd say 6, and that is basically, I'll base that upon how the first couple of drives look. I mean, he's been a slow starter. We've talked about that incessantly. And how he comes out will be vital to how his first half goes. I mean, probably the first portion of the game and the latter portions of the game have been places where he has been a little more erratic. So if he can start smoothly, I think that builds confidence for him. But everything, I think, is tenuous until you see it performed consistently. And I think we would all agree with that. So for May to have another consistent, efficient, decisive game, and I think the decisiveness was excellent. And it'll be interesting to see whether or not the Patriots employ the same kind of concentration on the running game that they did last week. The opportunity should be there. Of course, Pittsburgh's going to look at their own self-scouting and say, we cannot allow this to happen with Stevenson and Gibson and Henderson today, or May's going to have an easy day. So in order to make May be in positions to make mistakes, they have to have him in 3rd and 7. Not 2nd and 2. So this early portion of the game for May, I think, will really dictate to a large extent how well the Patriots do.
Yeah, Tom, I think they improved their first down, progress from week 1 to week 2. I mean, they went from 2.3 yards on first down averaging in first game to 5.3 in the second game. So huge, mm-hmm. huge difference. So to your point there. But Tom, I want to ask you about the defense. We hardly really talked much about the defense all training camp. All the concerns were on the offense. But man, through 2 games, are you kind of surprised? I mean, they're the worst team in passing yards allowed. They're the 2nd worst defense in giving up big plays. They miss a ton of tackles. Your thoughts on the defense and how it matches up against the Steelers offense?
I did think it would take some time for the parts to gel. Obviously, the front has gelled really well, I think, so far. It's that linebacker level that we talked about. Christian Ellis, Robert Spillane, that group right now is a little bit of an afterthought, I think, in terms of how the team was constructed. Not an afterthought. They spent – you get what I'm saying. They're spending $7 million on Christian Ellis, and they're spending a significant sum on Robert Spillane as a free agent. But it was very front heavy, and their decisions at the back end to put Hawkins and Craig Woodson and the array of safeties that they have up instead of Peppers and Duggar, I think speak to, okay, this is what we want to be, but it's going to take them a little bit of time, I think, to get the exactly the communication down, understanding where each guy is going to be, and how they want to operate. You know, for instance, we saw more blitzes in the first week, and I think they concluded, okay, we can't really blitz that much, and they tapered it off last week. But still, some of the big plays and the tackling, and Vrabel didn't say it was okay to have the big plays on the outside, but he said that that's the way we schemed. We wanted to take away the middle of the field, and they were able to do that a fair amount, even though they got beat on physical situations with bad matchups, A-chain on Robert Spillane, for instance. Yep. But, you know, I think that it's going to take some time. I'm not surprised that it might take a while. I remember in 20, I think it was 17, when Gilmore was new to the team, and they kept playing zone each week. And then finally they went to Tampa on a Thursday night game and said, you know what, let's just play man. And they played man. They shut them down. They had a terrific season the rest of the way in 2017. So I think it does take a little bit of time. And the Gonzalez factor continues to be a big dent, I think, to every plan that they have.
Certainly, and we're waiting on the inactives right now. One we don't have to wait on is Christian Gonzalez. We know he's already been ruled out. Tom, I heard you earlier this week saying you think the team's done him a disservice here by being vague about the nature of the injury. Is that something you still feel strongly about?
Yeah, I mean, I think what happens is we end up with a storyline that gets played out, and the initial report, I guess, put out by Jordan Schultz nationally was that it's not significant enough for him to miss the first game, and he's going to miss the first three. So it kind of had a day-to-day feel initially. And when that happens, unfortunately, you might have to answer a report if it's inaccurate. But if you say, I mean, make it worse in the initial report, if you're talking to national reporters, or if a national reporter is speaking to somebody outside your team and they make something sound less dire, then maybe say, look, it's significant. And until he's back out there, we're going to deal with it as if it's significant. So I think that's important for them to look. Ted and I have talked about this. I remember standing at Ty Warren's locker once and him at the end of the season saying, do you know how hurt I was? And I couldn't say anything all season long. And it was really difficult for me to perform at less than my best, to be criticized for it, and to not be able to provide what I wanted, and to feel like, hey, I'm trying to do something here, and I'm not able to do it at the level that I should. And there's, for the competitive advantage, the team doesn't ever really acknowledge that the player is limited at a significant amount. So to me, this Gonzalez thing has spiraled into longer and deeper conversations regarding what his toughness level is, what his concerns are. And if those aren't present, the team probably could have done a better job articulating that. And if they are present, the fact that they haven't done it has been fed by the lack of information.
Tom, one of the big surprises for me so far this season has been the offensive line. I was very, very concerned in OTAs and training camp and preseason. And then, I mean, 2 weeks in, they look really good, especially the young guys on the left side of the offensive line. I know there's a lot of bad penalties, you know, silly false starts and stuff, but those hopefully will get cleaned up. How have you seen them, the offensive line as a group, grow so far this season?
I just think that they improved every single position. On when it goes back to a spot where he's more comfortable, you bring in a veteran at right tackle, you bring in guys who are, you know, not signed off the street during the season as Ben Brown was last year to play center. I'm not stunned. I don't think that they're, you know, lock and key, the 90s Cowboys. And I know that you're not saying that either, but just the improvement was inevitable. And I think that bringing McDaniels back and having Doug Marrone there allows them to have guys working closely together who can understand what the limitations are and stay away from some of the limitations early on.
Yeah, Tom, I want to go back to Drake May if I can. Just the way he played in week two versus week one, very different offense, in my opinion. And you look at it, he was under center a heck of a lot more. The motions were a lot more from week one. His air yards were shortened in week two. There's just a lot of differences in the offense conceptually, in my opinion, from week one to week two. And Phil Perry floated out the idea, and I think he's dead on accurate, that Thomas Brown, the passing game coordinator, perhaps had some influence because he comes from the Sean McVay Shanahan tree. And I just think that there was a lot of those concepts in that game plan. Do you think that's an issue with Josh? Do you think he'll continue to implement more of those concepts? Or was that a one-off, do you think?
Well, they've always been so game plan oriented,
yeah.
Depending upon who they're going up against. So, but I don't know if you can necessarily do that with May right now and say we're going to be this week, we're going to be this the next week. You can have different concentrations, which I think that they did. But I do think that using the resources is important, and I think that the McDaniels embraces that, or at least he said he did, in the offseason and in during OTAs, embraces the idea that we have people here who have a lot of experience, and I'm going to lean on them because they might be closer to developing players like May, for instance, Thomas Brown, or having worked with Jared Goff when he was in Chicago. He might have more experience dealing with players who are more fresh and out of those systems that Thomas Brown can say, hey, look, these are things that we did with Caleb Williams, whoever, in his background that can be used with May. So I wouldn't be surprised if they continue to do that. He looks more comfortable in it, but again, it does go back to the running game, and if May is more comfortable throwing off a boot type action, then that's terrific, and he does look more comfortable. He's looked more comfortable when he was at North Carolina, too. He likes to move when he throws. He likes to throw a little bit with his feet moving, so that's fine. And if that leads them to play more West Coast style, that's great, as long as they don't get away from the gap runs, which I think are really the huge asset that you can get from Ramondre Stevenson, because he is such a straight-ahead runner. Continue with the gap runs and don't go with the stretch runs, but still employ, you know, the concepts of the West Coast offense downfield.
All right, Tommy, we'll let you go here. We know we called you a little earlier than usual, so we appreciate the OT here for sure. Do we like the Patriots today?
I did a big throat clear there. I thought I was on mute.
No.
Excuse me.
No problem. Before we let you go, do we like New England today or what?
I need more proof. The Steelers have better players. I think that Aaron Rodgers has proven when he goes against his team last year, being a prime example, that if you don't bother him, he's going to be a problem. So they have to get people around his feet. They have to hit him. They have to make him concerned. If they don't do that, they're going to lose. So I'm going to say that the Patriots are going to fail to do that in a sufficient way, and they're going to lose 27-23.
All right, there you go. That's Tommy Kern, NBC Sports Boston. Tom, great stuff as always. We look forward to talking with you next week.
All right, have a great day, guys.
Thanks. All right, Tommy Kern joining us here on NFL Sunday, Football Sunday here on WEEI. And we got our inactives out. We already know about one of them. Christian Gonzalez ruled out. We found that out on Friday. Eric Gregory, Caden Wallace, Efton Chisholm, sorry, Mego, Elijah Ponder, and Tommy DeVito is the third quarterback. Basically, a pretty clean slate here. Aside from Gonzalez, obviously, that's a big one. But we knew about that. I mean, you got your whole clip here.
I feel like Gregory, Wallace, Chisholm, and DeVito, of course, have been the same inactives for all three of the first 3 weeks of the season. So this seems pretty straightforward.
The one that steps out is Elijah Ponder. I think he was active for the first two games, right?
Correct. I believe so.
Mm-hmm. This is his first game being inactive, which is just noteworthy, I think.
Well, maybe because some guys aren't tackling properly.
Maybe.
He needs to sit his ass on the bench and get somebody else in there that might be able to tackle.
Yeah, certainly could be. I don't see a Steelers list yet. I don't know if they've put theirs out, but I know that they have a ton of injuries, ton of guys banged up on that defense.
I know Derek Harmon, the rookie defensive tackle, will be making his first career appearance today against the New England Patriots.
Okay, here's Pittsburgh. Porter's out. Deshaun Elliott's out. Two big guys in that secondary right there. Alex Highsmith out. Oof. Andrews Pete, the guard, and probably probably going to screw this up. Asize Odomewu.
That works.
That's
I like
pretty
it.
Good, actually.
Defensive end is probably very, very wrong, but those are your inactives there for Pittsburgh. I'd say injury-wise, the Patriots have a big leg up here. And I understand what Tommy's saying when he says that if you let Rodgers throw, then he's going to take you apart. But I don't know. I think that for a Steelers team like that, a Steelers team that is just kind of trying to stay above water but can't stop anything, if the Patriots really do have any momentum coming from that Miami game, they should be able to flex that this week. They really should. Like, there's no reason not to.
I 100% agree. Like, this is the perfect opportunity to get back-to-back wins for the first time since, what is it, 2023?
It's insane.
Yeah.
That's insane.
Like, it's nuts.
Seems like longer. No?
Yeah, it seems like much longer. And so I feel like this is a great opportunity for them to ride that kind of wave of success from Miami. This defense is not that good. The Steelers defense is not that good. TJ Watt does not feel like he is nearly the kind of player he had been in years past. This is no Alex Highsmith is huge. This is an opportunity for you to control the line of scrimmage, attack down the field. Again, they are massively susceptible to explosive plays. This is your chance to really kind of have another great offensive performance and show everybody that you can compete.
Yeah, certainly. One thing about Efton Chisholm, and it's not really even about Efton Chisholm because it's not like I expected him to play, no wide receivers really popped last week. Like, it was Stevenson with the runs and that big catch. But other than that, Booty only caught one ball. Douglas had another dud of a game.
One
like,
ball.
I was sort of wondering if maybe they would kind of try and, I don't know, just shake it up a little bit in that wide receiver
room. Well, shockingly, Stephon Diggs leads the team in catches, doesn't he?
Is that right? I don't know.
Yes, I believe he leads the team with 10 catches.
He had four last week, so yeah, that could be. Yeah.
And a big fourth down catch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 10 catches on 12 targets for 89 yards this year.
So we thought maybe he could be a deep threat. The Patriots don't have a deep threat. And
it's
so
Kayshon Booty.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
That's
you're
the
right.
best one.
I'm sorry. You're
no,
right.
No, you're right.
But I thought it was going to be Steph Diggs. He turns out to be more of a DeMario Douglas slot possession guy, which – that's fine with me as long as you have a deep threat and you have Kayshon Booty. I don't know how serious of a deep threat he is, but he's been okay.
Right now, your deep threat's Ramondre Stevenson.
Well, yeah, literally. So Ramondre Stevenson, Kayshon Booty, Hunter Henry all have the highest average yards per catch. Booty at 17, Henry at 15, which is shocking to me. And then Ramondre Stevenson, 14 yards a catch.
All right, there you go. 617-779-7937 is the phone number if you'd like to join the conversation. When we come back, we will have a conversation, pre-recorded conversation, with Jermaine Wiggins with Wiggy's Keys. That's coming up next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, it's quarter to noon. That means it's time for Wiggy's Keys. Jermaine Wiggins, you hear him every morning on the Greg Hill Show, and you also hear him every Sunday on Football Sunday as he gives you three keys to the game. Let's get to key number one.
All right, what up? It's your boy Wiggy here. My keys to the game, let's get into it. Number one, you got to be able to make sure you run the football, because when you can run the football effectively, it makes things so much easier for Drake May, especially in play action.
Running the ball, main thing there. And listen, last week, it's not as if they ran the ball with impunity. The run game was a lot better, but Stevenson only had 54 yards on 11 carries. Drake May ran the ball a bit. Gibson had five carries and got some yards there, and Henderson didn't get the ball very much at all. But the run game was effective. All in all, 29 carries for 122 yards. That's over 4 yards a carry, and May did get in the end zone. I think the run game is pivotal to this offense operating.
They had 19 rush attempts in the first half. They had 18 rush attempts total in week one. So running the ball in the first half is led to a lot of their play action touchdowns that they threw. So I hope they have the same kind of mindset in this game as they had last week.
Well, because like as we pointed out, the run game sets up the play-action game, and the play-action game allows you to take deep shots down the field. And this Steelers defense sucks at defending the run and sucks against explosive plays. Like, it's the perfect combination.
And particularly, they suck at defending a run off the offense's left side. If you run to the left side of your offensive line, the right side of the defense, you average 6 yards per carry. If you run to T.J. Watt's side, the right side, you average 2 yards.
Well, rookies are going to have a big day.
Yeah, exactly.
Certainly. And another thing I like about last week and the way it all sort of broke down was that Stevenson was your leading receiver, and he had the most receiving yards. Mm-hmm. So it's not like when you go line up there with Stevenson, everyone's going to say, oh, they're running it. With Henderson, right. It's going to be a pat. You know how they used to do with White and Sony Michel? Like, you knew what they were going to do. And that's not the case now. And I think that in years prior, you never really looked at Stevenson like he was some big receiving threat. He could catch a screen out of the backfield, maybe. But you didn't. I was shocked when I saw him galloping down the field like that, going up and getting like a high paw. Like that was. I think that really opens things up a lot in terms of what they want to do and the kind of looks they're going to see.
Well, because all three running backs can run and all three can catch.
Sure,
and they're all different paces. They're all they can attack you in so many different ways. I think that versatility is massive for this offense.
All right, what's key number two?
Number two, you gotta make sure that your secondary can get it together against Aaron Rodgers. Your pass defense is horrible. You gotta do something when it comes to defending Aaron Rodgers.
Okay, I don't disagree with him there. I don't think anybody does. Whether you think Aaron Rodgers is great or not, you went up against a couple of quarterbacks that I certainly wouldn't consider to be great. Tua's not great, and Geno Smith is good every other week, I guess. I guess you got him on a good week. But either way,
I like him this week.
He's not wrong about this Patriots secondary, and in general, the pass defense has not been great. With Gonzalez out, that puts a lot of extra stuff there on Davis, on Jones, on Jalen Hawkins, who's made a couple of picks this year. It's not like he's not contributing at all, but you got a rookie out there at the other safety. You got Duggar and Pettis, and it just seems like there's not really a lot of help on the way here until Gonzalez gets back. Is this something with all the targets and weapons that Pittsburgh has, is this something that's doable? I mean, is it something that's doable today?
It's my biggest concern is the pass defense versus the passing attack for the Steelers, because DK Metcalf was on the Seahawks last year, killed you. Jonnu Smith was on the Dolphins last year, killed you. Aaron Rodgers was on the Jets last year, killed you. All three of those guys are now with the Pittsburgh Steelers, and so that's an issue. The team that leads the league in yards after catch are the Pittsburgh Steelers, and that scares me because the Patriots linebackers are having a hard time tackling the ball, so that would suggest that the strengths for in my biggest matchups in this game is that passing attack versus the secondary, so I'm certainly concerned.
Yeah, I feel like it's going to be another week where I don't have a lot of confidence in this defense, and your offense is going to have to win you the football game. Last week, the offense won you the football game. I think it's going to have to be the same way again this week.
Who would have said that 3 weeks ago, Chris?
Nobody.
Yeah.
Nobody.
Entering this season, we thought this defense could be a top 10 unit. They are not playing anywhere close to that level, especially in the secondary.
Yeah, not in the back. I think the pass rush has been kind of good. Like,
I mean, lead the league in sacks.
Landry has been excellent. I thought he was just going to be a guy that Vrabel brought over because he knew him, and he's just, this is my guy. He's been awesome.
Can still play.
Oh, he's been terrific.
Milt has been such a great signing for them, too.
Yeah.
What he has done in the interior of the defensive line has been excellent.
Yeah, so they are getting to the quarterback, and that should be giving the secondary a bit of a break, you know? It's not like it's having all day to go and throw, but it's just not working out that way. Davis has been a disappointment so far. Marcus Jones, I mean, listen, I'm not sure how good we ever expected he was going to be as a defensive back. I liked him more as a return man, but now that that's a whole different thing in the NFL, and you got, what's his name over there, Gibson running him back for touchdowns, you may not need so much of that. But, yeah, the secondary, big problem there. I agree with Wiggy's second key. Let's hear number three.
And number three, you got to make sure, and we say this every week, that you can protect Drake May. The offensive line has done a good job of it so far, because if you can keep Drake May upright, you're going to win football games. That's your boy with the keys. Wiggs out.
Thanks, Wiggy. All right, that's Wiggy's third key. It's a big one, and that is keeping Drake May upright, something they did a fine job of last week, I would say, and something that despite all the concern and the pearl clutching about this offensive line and all the rookies on it, so far it seems like they've got a pretty good thing going here.
The offensive line, top 10. They rank 9th in pass protection, which is amazing compared to ranking dead last year. So give this kid time, and good things will happen. It helps that the ball came out as fast I think last week than any other game in his career. That was by design. I kind of would support them continuing doing that. But the offensive line, Chris, has been a huge, huge bright spot so far when it was clearly the biggest issue they had last year.
Yeah, the offensive line has been great. And to your point, 2.73 seconds time to throw for Drake May so far, which ranks in very much so in the top half of the league. Yeah. Like, that's kind of what you want. You don't want him to have to hold on to the ball too long. It's make... And we talked about this earlier with those play action boots or just those boots to the side, right? Like, you take away half the field, you reduce the amount of reads that a young quarterback has to make on the field, and it allows him to make a quick decision of I'm hitting that receiver or running with the football.
Perfect.
And it simplifies so much for a quarterback that's still learning a lot in the NFL. This guy still has not started a full season's worth of NFL games. He's still learning. That's how you help a young quarterback.
And on the subject of still learning, the penalties. I mean, listen, it's one thing to keep the guy upright. It's another thing to keep giving away yards, giving away downs, et cetera. That doesn't help a young quarterback either. So, you know, for Campbell and Wilson and Bradbury and Moses, all these guys who are getting whistled for holds and false starts and all
Wait
that stuff,
up.
They have got to get that out
Wait
of their
up,
system. Otherwise, that's really the last thing. I mean, that's it. And it's only been two games. I know I'm not going to crown this offensive line some great unit yet. I mean, so far they've been good. But if they can get that out of their system, then there's not much else to criticize, really. I mean, they've been very, very good.
Yeah, and I mean, the Patriots punted, what, twice against the Dolphins last week? One of those was probably because of the sack, which there was also an offensive holding on that play. And then another one because very first play of the drive, Morgan Moses, 5-yard false start, and you're back 5 yards, it's now first and 15, and you're kind of behind the sticks. And, like, that is never going to help. It happened a bunch against the Raiders where you set yourself up, it's now first and 15, you got to do extra work just to try and get the first down, you can't do it, and you find yourself punting the ball
away.
You
know, conversely, real quick, just I thought I found it in two games, teams have only punted 3 times total against the Patriots.
Wow.
So Marcus Jones only has 3 punt returns.
The Raiders only punted once?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep. They sure did.
Yeah, because there was a pick, and then, yeah, I think that's right.
So
wow,
that's let's go, defense. Let's go. Can we? I've been in games where we've forced 9 punts before in a game. So 3 punts in 2 games. Let's go, defense.
You're listening to WEEI Football Sunday. Christian Arcan, Ted Johnson, Chris Schein will reset on our main takes of the week coming up. We'll also have our top Ted list that's coming up in the final hour, which begins right after this.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, 2-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.